Neil Schon is a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer. He's a founding member of Journey. And Neil and Journey will be performing at Wrigley Field this Monday, July 15th, along with the Steve Miller Band and Def Leppard. Neil wrote a memoir some years ago, appropriately titled Don't Stop Believin', when he told his own story about the Lady of Angels fire while attending school here in Chicago, not to mention his incredible musical journey for over 50 years, starting with Santana and a half a century with Journey. Neil, welcome in.
I'm doing great, Dave.
So glad.
I'm really happy to be here in Chicago.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So much to talk about. You know, Journey, you know, first got together in late 73. The first album was in 75. It was 1981 when Escape came out. Who's Crying Now? Still They Ride Open Arms. The iconic Don't Stop Believin'. A massive hit for you guys. This was the first album that was truly bigger than life.
Escape was massively huge. But here in Chicago, we actually, you know, broke out of pretty much Chicago and Detroit. I think Detroit first with the Infinity record in 78. And we were on our way after Infinity. And, you know, we started out selling, you know, gold and then platinum. Then it went three times platinum. And I don't know where it's at now, but I'll tell you what, our whole catalog is just moving again, which is so, you know, amazing that, you know, it throughout this whole time period, we've got all these different generations of people that and kids that are picking up on our older music, and we're playing it all. So it's a gas, man, and I cannot wait to get back on stage. Yeah,
that's a really cool thing. Is that really it has touched different generations? I mean, you know, your songs keep getting reintroduced over and over, and you know, my kids know all your songs, and especially "Don't Stop Believin'." And you know, to top that off, it got another boost in the 2000s, early 2000s, when it was the final song being played on The Sopranos. I mean, all your music has made such an indelible mark on rock and roll.
Thank you, man. I'm very proud of the work that we've all done and what we've accomplished. You know, receiving the Diamond Award just recently for Escape. You know, that doesn't happen to too many just single albums. It does, you know, for bigger bands on greatest hits, as it did for us years ago. But, you know, it's a great sign of where things are heading for us, and the future is very bright.
You know, after the release of Escape, bands like Bon Jovi, Def Leppard, Whitesnake were all producing tracks that really did follow your playbook, like, you know, extremely catchy, you know, great choruses, explosive power rock chords, lyrics, sing-alongs. I mean, it really did inspire so many other bands.
You know, it's funny you say that, Dave, but when we used to play in the East Coast instead of playing in New York because the union was so expensive, mm-hmm. we played, you know, multiple dates in New Jersey in a bigger place. And John Bon Jovi and Richie Sambora would come down and they'd check out the show and I'd always say hello. And then the next thing you would know, if we were playing like a cover song like I'll Be There, you know, like by the Four Tops, mm-hmm. you know, they would end up putting it in their set. So it was funny. You know, they awesome. Came, but it was inspiring.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They were inspired by it, and like we all are by, you know, whoever.
No question. No question. How did Journey first come together, Neil? Because, I mean, you really pulled this band together. This was your band.
Well, you know, with the demise of the Santana band that I was in, that made it through, you know, the third record that I managed to play on a lot of lead guitar with Carlos, which was amazing for me. It's the first album I ever made. And we had a hit with Everybody's Everything. And that was actually myself playing lead guitar and Carlos playing bass and rhythm guitar on that track. And it was a number one hit, which is very, so exciting, you know, for me, even to this day. But, you know, We disbanded after Caravanserai because, you know, Greg Raleigh was really kind of wanting to keep the band where it was at musically and that type of rocking, you know, Latin fusion with, mm-hmm. with you know, African rhythms and with rock guitar, you know. Carlos wanted to drift off more to more progressive plays that was, you know, maybe not as commercial. Everybody felt, and the band was just kind of, you know, falling apart from a lot of things. And so we left and just called it a day after Caravan Sarai. And I was playing with Greg Rico and Larry Graham from Sly and the Family Stone, the rhythm section, the bass player and drummer. And we had like a power trio going that I was pretty excited about. And Larry Graham was singing lead vocals with his baritone voice and made it very different. It was like really kind of like funky, heavy metal, blues, electrified jamming. You know, if you can mix like Sly with Hendrix and everything else that was, cool. you know, who I was inspired by, it was kind of a mixture of all that. And actually, before I had seen a band, Mother's Finest, you know, in Europe that we played with, that was actually that kind of thing going on with the three of us. And Larry got cold feet at the last minute. I wanted to do more of a straightforward R&B, you know, funk thing, which he did with Graham Central Station. And so Greg and I left shortly after that. I just, you know, I learned a lot about how to play funk, you know, playing with him and hanging out in Oakland with Freddie Stone, you know, the rhythm guitarist, Sly's brother. And they showed me a lot, man, stuff that I didn't know at all.
That's cool.
And so I took what I learned and decided that I wanted to do something that was going to feature myself a bit more as a soloist. So at that point, a gentleman, Herbie Herbert, who was our original manager for Journey, he decided that he wanted to be a manager because he was basically managing Santana at the time. Mm-hmm. It was a dysfunctional manager that was managing the band that had a lot of issues and was not taking care of business. And so Herbie was kind of doing everything. He was Carlos's guitar tech, my guitar tech.
Wow.
Mixing out in front, mixing the monitors. He was like running all over the place, you know? And, you know, he approached me and said, look, he says, I would love to wrap a band around you. I want to start a band with you and wrap some guys around you. I have, you know, some good friends that I think that would be good with you. And that's where it started. We started getting together, and the first guy he introduced me to was George Tickner, who wrote, you know, a lot of the material on our first album. And he had some really interesting ideas with open tunings on the guitar, different types of tunings that I've never seen anybody do before at that time. And so I was interested, you know, I thought it was, he had, you know, really cool foresight of where we could go and where my guitar would sound good in. And then he introduced me to Ross Valerie shortly after that. And then we started playing. And I had seen the drummer, Prairie Prince, who, you know, has been with the Tubes for years,
right,
and thought he was a tremendous rock drummer, you know. And so we got together. We went into Wally Heider's studio in San Francisco and laid down these ideas with our initial demo tape that we did with most of the songs that ended up on our first record. And I felt like it was pretty magical, you know. It might have not been so radio ready, even though radio was a little more daring in those days.
Sure, sure.
You know, the rock radio. But we were, you know, really just killing it live. People love to come out and see us live. And so, you know, that's where it all started. But it's funny, man. I'm starting to integrate a bit of that into all the new stuff that we're doing in our show. You know, that style mixed with the chemistry of the hit songs that we have, and putting segues in between things, using bits and pieces of, you know, that, because they were so musical. And Journey, yeah, I think, honest to God, I mean, we took a hard left turn when Steve Perry came in the band, and for the better of the band, commercially, I mean, you know, we got known worldwide, sold millions of records, sold out stadiums. We're still selling out stadiums.
Yes, you are,
you know? And, but the other audience that was there was a completely different audience. It was like a Grateful Dead or have you like a Fish audience.
Yeah, that appreciated your music in a different way. Absolutely. And what I love about this, Neil, the way you're talking about this, your passion, about even starting the band and kind of going back to some of the, you know, the original styles of your music and so forth. It seems like it's yesterday for you.
It is like yesterday, yeah. And I remember it all.
Yeah,
it's really unbelievable that after this many years, I don't have to go back and listen to the record. I remember it all.
That's great.
And so it's embedded in me, you know?
Yeah.
Much like all music that, you know, I love, no matter what it is, what I'm listening to, I'm kind of like a sponge. You know, I listen to it.
I love it,
and it sinks in, and then, you know, it's there for life.
All right, we're talking to rock legend Neil Schon from Journey, and there's more with him next on 720 WGN. State player on 720 WGN. We're talking to rock legend Neil Schon of Journey. Your father bought you your very first guitar, Estella, at 10 years old. And when he figured out you knew what you were doing, and he bought you a 1963 Gibson Sunburst, which is kind of a big deal.
Yeah, 335, beautiful 335. And then, you know, unfortunately, that 335, I loved that guitar. And someone stole it. From my folks', you know, apartment. They broke in. Yeah. And so I waited for the insurance money to come, and I went down to the music store with my father at that time, and I saw a Les Paul. I'd never seen a Les Paul before, really. You know, I hadn't even looked at one. It was a reissue of a 68 gold top with, you know, little P90 pickups.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the guitar that I played all through the Santana records.
That's cool.
And also played like on the first couple Journey records. And that guitar has been around the world many, many times, from Ghana, Africa to all over the world.
First of all, again, love the passion. I mean, the passion is endless with you on this music. So for so many years doing this, you know, it just comes out.
Thank you, Dave. I love what I do. I truly do. And it was the only reason I ever played music from the get-go, is that I just, you know, when I got attached to the guitar at 10, started playing, and by the time I was 12, I was really into the blues, you know, and studying all the greatest blues players. It was like B.B. King or Albert King, and, you know, managed to make friends with a lot of club owners in San Francisco. Although I was very underage then, I was like 14 or something, they'd let me go in the back door, you know, and go back out through the back door.
That's amazing. Amazing.
And they just allowed me to come on stage and jam and then leave, right? And I became friends with all of them. And so Elvin Bishop happened to be one of the guys that took me under his wing. And he had this thing that was happening at one of the blues clubs that Michael Bloomfield used to front in San Francisco, and he would have this shoot-off of guitar players that would fly in from all over the place, you know, every Tuesday night. And so I'd go up there, and he kept on, the audience kept on, you know, giving me the slay of the night, and so I kept winning. 3 weeks later, I was still winning. He goes, okay, it's time to move on and put somebody else in your position, but he says, I have a treat for you. He says, for doing so well and winning, he says, I'm going to take you down to Fillmore West in San Francisco tonight, and we're going to meet B.B. King, and you're going to get on stage with him.
Wow. Wow.
And so I was like, what?
Yeah.
You know, so.
What an opportunity.
You know, it was the first time I'd ever been there, really. And we get down there, and I met Bill Graham. Bill Graham was backstage, who I became very good friends with from thereafter. And I met BB, and he couldn't have been kinder, as such a gentleman. And he didn't know what I was about, but he trusted Elvin because he knew Elvin. And so we get up on stage. I'm on far left stage looking out.
Mm-hmm.
BB's on far right, and Elvin's in the middle. So
wow.
BB, you know, looks over at me like, okay, boy, let's see what you got.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And he plays a couple riffs, and then, you know, honoring him, I play back the same riffs with his tone and his vibrato.
He must have loved that too.
I studied it.
Yeah, yeah.
And he loved it.
Yeah.
And we went on like this for about 15 minutes. And his smile got wider, and we became very good friends.
And so many years after this all began for you, the band was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. What did that mean to you? There was a lot of history on stage that night.
Well, you know what? I really loved it, you know, and you know, talk about things that are sentimental, you know, a lot of people are going, how can you get rid of that Les Paul that you played on Don't Stop Believing, right, and Who's Crying Now and Stone in Love and all these hits and all these tours? Don't you have any sentimental feelings about it? And I go, you know what? That guitar has got a lot of mojo in it and a lot of history and soul in it. Someone's really going to enjoy it. But the sentimental value that I have, the sentiment that sticks with me, are the times that we spent together writing that stuff and performing it live. And, you know, time moves on. The band moves on as well. We've been in, you know, had many, many changes in the band and managed to always, you know, survive.
Yes.
And so I'm just saying that we're not going anywhere.
All right, Neil leads the way with Journey this Monday night at Wrigley Field, along with the Steve Miller Band and Def Leppard. Neil, Chicago cannot wait.
You know, I know how big Journey is in Chicago because it's one of my favorite places to play, as well as New York and many cities. But Chicago, ever since 1978, and we played, you know, down by the pier with Cheap Trick, it was like ours.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It's been our city.
Always a pleasure, Neil. Thanks so much. All right, news is next here on 720 WGN.